Hello, and welcome back to Spinal Cast. I'm your host, David Stevens, and joining us today is Jeff Toby. Jeff is a lifelong advocate for the SCI community. He's a long-term volunteer and supporter of the Spinal Cord Society with more than 20 years of running their annual golf tournament in which you've raised over $500,000 for research, which is incredible. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, and thank MCPF for letting me come here today and say a few things.
Of course. We're thrilled to have you on the episode today. So I know you've been injured for 38 years. If you wouldn't mind, just for our viewers and listeners, giving us like a quick synopsis, what happened? How, you know, what was your injury story? When did it happen? Kind of a little background about that.
I was injured in 1987.
Okay.
At the ripe age of 22.
Oh.
And was on a motorcycle. Been riding motorcycles since I've been 10. And just happened to be coming around the corner and
was it a street motorcycle?
This one was a street bike.
Okay.
And I was kind of unfamiliar with it and having trouble cornering it and going around the corner up in northern Minnesota. And along comes, I was struggling with the corner and I had to meet a car on the corner. And so it was kind of a head-on collision, but I had a helmet on and I had boots on and army fatigues and gloves, which I, on a warm August day, usually don't have. And that was pretty much it. And I would have walked away from the accident with a broken right foot and a busted left thumb had the cervical not taken a hit, you know. And, of course,
yeah.
I had a helmet on. And did the helmet break the neck? Most likely. But it also saved my skull because it took one hit in the front that saved me from being maybe worse.
It's a tough call to say what, you know, really was whether it was beneficial or not. But that's a tough story. So you were 22. At that point, were you in college then?
Yep. Third year at the University of Minnesota.
U of M. Okay.
Yep.
And what were you studying?
Going for a business degree.
Okay.
Business administration.
Got it. And I believe from our discussions before we ended up starting filming, your family had a long-term family business that you were kind of already planned on working in. Is that correct?
Yep. I've been working the family business since I was 10 years old.
Okay. And what is the family business?
Family business is where automotive wholesale redistributor jobber in St. Paul. And we've been in St. Paul. We'd actually, the business started with a battery business my grandfather started in 1914.
Oh, wow.
And I was the third generation to take it over. And I pretty much knew what I wanted to do when I got in, you know, when growing up since grade one. And I thought it was really neat to be a business person and watch my dad and my parents. And
totally.
So, yeah, it was good. And I was all set, and I was all systems go until this happened. And it was life-changing, to say the least.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and speaking of life-changing, you know, one of the things that we talk about in a lot of different episodes on this podcast is the kind of long-term effects and challenges of a spinal cord injury. And I think it would be interesting to have you talk a little bit about what are some of those long-term challenges that people who might be listening might not even think about being, you know, something that you're dealing with long-term with a spinal cord injury?
Yeah, this is an injury that, again, being in this 38 years, I've seen a lot, talked to a lot of people. I've been through a lot. Those people have been through a lot. You think you got a bad story and you come across and there's somebody worse, but it affects so much of the body and all its functions. I mean, it's the total CNS, the total central nervous system.
Right.
And it controls everything, how you perspire, when you don't perspire, your heat, your cold, your touch, your feel.
Yeah.
It runs the whole show neurologically, and there's a lot of nerves in that human body.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're plagued with urinary tract infections.
Okay.
We're plagued with pressure sores.
Yeah.
I'm just getting off pressure sore. I've been dealing with 5 years and it's still not healed.
Oh.
And that's been on my hip. And that was a real close one.
Yeah.
And pressure sores are another one. And they get it whether you're a quad or you're a para.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of those things where it's like to get over it, you basically have to become a hermit. You know, like you can't go about your daily life because that's what caused it. And so it's like a catch 22 when it comes to pressure sores. That's something we've certainly talked to other people who have dealt with that. The perspiration thing is something you brought up too. our last guest, who does a bunch of outdoors, you know, cycling and stuff in his wheelchair. And, you know, he struggles a lot because his body can't regulate heat like yours. And you can't really perspire, and your heart rate won't reach that threshold that you need it to really benefit the body in a exercise fashion.
Yep.
And it's like, I would never even have thought of that. The fact that it is like very crippling in the sense that your body can't achieve the threshold it needs to continue to grow and build and strengthen and things like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then you have to compensate for all that.
Right.
You get sprayed in the summertime, and in the wintertime you put on more layers.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's interesting. And then we have other things, you know, we have, with the long-term sitting, mm-hmm. we're a sitting duck for diabetes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to be another thing. And I was a very active person when I got hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I've played high school football. I fished, I hunted,
right,
all the time. I mean, I was just Mr. Outdoors,
right.
And now it's devastating,
right?
You know, and then you got blood pressure issues, and you have heart disease, and all these things. And then as we age in these things, mm-hmm. we're fighting all the aging things. Now as I'm starting to get up into that age bracket where, you know, looking at the back door of Social Security, you know,
it's true though. Even talking with Peter, it feels a little bit like a ticking time bomb, which is an awful thing to say, but it does feel like you've been given a shorter stopwatch.
Oh, absolutely.
That hits different. Especially when, you know, you've been sitting in your position for 38 years and it's a tough thing to kind of come to terms with. And a lot of people, I think, and we had discussed this a little bit when we first got introduced to one another about, you know, people coming to terms with the situation and not feeling necessarily driven to go out and make a huge lasting change because it's like, I'm going to live with what the hand I'm dealt kind of thing. But it's hard to kind of come to terms with something when it just feels like it was either ripped away from you, or the time is just fleeting, you know?
Yeah. But you know what really gets you is every day I wake up, David, and you get kicked in the teeth. I mean, this is every single day.
Yeah.
Who can keep martyring this? Who can keep going? A lot of us in chairs are going, and we're doing it every single day. But every single day, I would love for a lot of folks to see what it's like to get up and live my morning. To get up, and that's why I can't do business. I don't do these things.
Yeah,
I physically can't do it.
Right.
It holds me down. And there's a lot of people with all sorts of different injuries. They get a little bit more function or things like that, or they get better help.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they can do some of this stuff, and all the more power to them. You know. But in my case, I'm very limited, and then I'm limited by the people that take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other issue.
Right.
So.
Well, and I think that's another thing we've talked about in other episodes is, you know, the difficulty of it being always on someone else as well. You know, you can't do things by yourself. And this fact that like your individualism is gone, your ability to be by yourself, doing things for yourself. And that's all really tough. Like, I mean, I think what you touched on though is, you know, all of this lived experience is really valuable in the sense that it helps you see what the difference of a cure or any sort of therapies that do come out and how impactful that they can be for people who are struggling. And I just kind of wanted to get you to talk a little bit about why research is so important in that sense and how, you know, these therapies, even just a small therapy and how valuable that can be to someone who's, you know, living the experience that you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say this, you know, when I first got injured 38 years ago in 1987, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, fine, I can martyr through this, and we're going to get through this, and, you know, things are going to change. Technology's starting to change. It's 1987.
Yeah.
We're going to get on a roll, and, hey, things are going to really roll. And, you know, I'll probably be out of this 10 years, 15 years, 20 years tops.
Yeah.
And here I am, 38 years, and we're still not really there yet.
Mm-hmm.
The needle has moved a little bit, but very little.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nothing moves, David, without change. How does change happen? Change happens because somebody else wants something different.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wanted something different. Otherwise, we'd all be driving black cars. Remember that old adage?
That's true. That's true.
Your tennis shoes have changed. The chair you're in has changed. Everything changes because somebody wants something to move. If this doesn't move, it's because nobody wants it to move.
Mm-hmm.
Everything on this planet changes because we want it to change. And sometimes we get things that we don't want to change. It's all human, you know. We're the human condition. Yeah, the human condition or Mother Nature.
Right.
But you know, you got to fight for this. You have to. And with what I'm dealt with every day, and so are thousands of other people across this planet.
Mm-hmm.
How can you not want some type of a change?
Right.
Our bowel bladder, my hands. I can move my arms.
Mm-hmm.
My hand function. I'd love to be able to hold a pen again like I used to.
Right.
You know, just go to the bathroom by yourself.
Exactly.
You know, it's just.
We've talked to a few people who have even done, the spinal cord stimulators in mm-hmm. which that was one of the things. They got bladder control back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's something, it's small, but it's huge for them.
Huge for us.
It's like, it's been 10 years since I've had that control.
Or, yeah.
You know, the woman who had the exo suit, she's like, I hadn't walked in 10 years and now I'm able to like get up and like get something out of the fridge by myself.
Yeah.
So I think that you raise a good point. We're making small steps, but the big leaps and bounds that are going to make the huge change for the masses aren't there yet. But what interests me is, you know, obviously you've been in this for 38 years, but you've clearly had some positive experience and some support along the way in family and friends, and things that are driving you to get up every day and continue to push for this cure. What kind of role did that support system play in the SEI journey for you?
Oh, it's very important. You have to have people behind you. You have to have a support network of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Parents, siblings, friends, family. But the sad part of it is that you lose the people that you were once with. Just like all of us, we kind of hang out with people that we do things together.
Yeah.
You know, if you're golf, you hang with golfers. If you hunt, you hunt with hunters or hang with hunters.
Right.
You know, you do those things with people you do. When you quit doing those things, those people kind of drift away, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now you're in a whole new situation. Well, we're all in a situation. We all can't seem to pull it together as a combined group because we've all got issues.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, you know, you might have a friend that's down in bed for months because of pressure sores.
Right.
Or somebody battling a UTI. But you need that support network. It's very, very important. And, you know, we've got, you know, you got friends and you got family. And I've met thousands of families and people that want to get involved with this. I ran my golf tournament. I had families coming to me.
Right.
Almost on bended knee saying, we all want to help. I got this great big party. I got people I want to bring in, 20 golfers. We want to sponsor like 5 holes, this, that. And we can't do it because the person in the chair doesn't believe in wanting a cure or wanting the help or advanced medical science.
Mm.
And they're just beside themselves because they want to help the person. They can't physically help them, but this is a way that they can do that.
Yeah.
By raising funds for
research.
Research.
Right.
And that's where, you know, that was kind of my niche.
I guess what's your message to that individual? You know, I think, again, hearkening back to some of the previous conversations we've had with other people who have experienced paralysis, you know, there's that what I would call depression stage early on. You're recently injured and you kind of hit rock bottom as far as like, just this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened to me. Do I want to continue? Do I want to keep doing this? Is it worth me getting up every day? You know, and like, I think it would be hard to snap yourself out of that thought process and get to a point in which you're like, I'm going to start dedicating more of my time and effort towards this research that, to your point, hasn't gone anywhere in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I wasting my time and effort on something that is clearly not moving quickly enough? You know, what's your message to those people to kind of drive them of like, but there is progress being made and there is a reason why you should be so passionate?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there is progress being made. It's ever so slowly. Has the needle moved? Yes. Could it move a lot faster? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Again, more people behind it will bring in more money. And again, the people doing the research, I've met a lot of these researchers. These people have PhD, MDs
yeah.
behind their name. They don't come at 10 bucks an hour. They're not changing oil on your car. You know, these guys are, they're top-notch people. And
yeah.
they deserve that type of pay. And if you want a good quality product like all of us, you pay for good quality. And,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, you're getting free money. So you take that money and you want to invest it into something, you know, that's worthwhile. And we're very, well, at least with the Spinal Cord Society, and there's a few organizations out there, 501c3s, that are tied to, you know, cures for chronic spinal cord injury. They carefully place their dollars. And Spinal Cord Society is very small, but they carefully place their dollars. And that's what attracted me to them. They accounted for every penny that they had. And they're still going after, what are they going, like 47 years now,
yeah.
you know, so.
No, I think that's huge. And that's part of why MCPF has always been so attractive to me personally, is just knowing where all the money is going and how they're funding the researchers who have these groundbreaking ideas,
mm-hmm.
not just, you know, oh, I'm going to throw it in a pool with a bunch of other big players and hopefully mm-hmm. my dollar goes somewhere that it's needed. It's more, we want to help drive research to push the envelope. We want to find something new. We
mm-hmm.
want to be, you know, the thing that gets on CNN because no one ever thought that was going to be possible. That sort of research. And so I think you're right that there are organizations certainly that people need to know more about, that your dollar goes a lot further with a smaller organization, especially
yep.
nonprofit wise.
Yeah. Yeah. And you gotta, you know, you gotta keep pushing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get done. And if nobody pushes, it's dollars and cents. And it's been that way since the end of man.
Yeah.
That this stuff is not going to change unless we change it. And sadly, the spinal cord injury, you know, community, we're small knit.
Mm-hmm.
This just doesn't happen to everybody.
Yeah.
When it happens to you, it's devastating to you and about, you know, 30, 40 people around you. That's the hard part of this small injury.
Right.
But, you know, meanwhile, back at the ranch, you know, there's just not enough of us to really give this thing a shove forward. And I know, you know, Peter and I have been at this a long time, though we belong to different, you know, organizations. We still got still the main goal. And, you know, he's fighting down one alley, I'm fighting down the other. Who's going to win the race? I don't know. But
exactly. Well, you know, hopefully we both come out on the same street and it's
well,
a good one.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
so one of the things that I, you know, I was thinking about this after we initially spoke about the progress of research and how it just doesn't seem like it's moving quick enough. And I wonder if there's something about the incentivization of these researchers and like if they're incentivized to really drive towards, you know, groundbreaking research and keeping researchers employed and pushing the boundaries. But is there enough of a what I would call kind of incentive for them to really get a cure out to someone who needs it versus just figuring out that cure is possible kind of thing. And I'm interested in what your take is on that kind of the incentives of research.
I think the people that are involved in the field, and you've interviewed a few of them because I've watched your podcast.
Yeah.
I think they're very dedicated people. At least they seem to be. And of course, if they've got something that they think really going to help, you know,
they're going to
have
it.
They have the guts enough to come forward and say, hey, you know, I can help you.
Yeah.
You know, we actually got to the point where we opened up our own research facility back in 2000. And while we did our work and some of the ground spade work we were doing, there were researchers. And of course, this is great with the internet. People can, you know, kind of watch from the weeds, so to speak. And we actually had somebody come out of the weeds and say, hey, you guys, this facility in Fort Collins that you had created all this research with is wonderful, but hopefully someday you're going to need, and we knew it too, a doctor and a hospital and some nurses, because you're going to have to put this treatment in people and
yeah,
it's going to be way bigger than what we can handle. And I'm tied to the University of Crazy Enough, Minnesota.
Yeah.
That she came out and said, hey, I think I can help. And we completely closed our facility down, moved everything back to Minnesota again, where we originated back in 1978 at the University of Minnesota, hoping that we could just bring it right there and it was just going to come on. And no, this problem was a lot more difficult than what looked like from the basis things. And the guy that started the SCS was a PhD doctor and was a University of Minnesota professor.
Yeah.
You know, so he knew the ins and outs of research. And but getting back to your question, people want to help people, you know, and these researchers, I think if they've got something they can bring to the table that's beneficial, you know, absolutely.
No, I think you bring up a good point. From the researchers I've interviewed, I want to make sure anyone of them who is watching, I'm not being, you know, I'm not saying anything about your incentives and what you're getting after. I more or less wanted to kind of just bring up the topic to discuss, because I do think it's a situation where the system itself is designed in a way that makes it difficult to get things all the way through to the patient. You know, the system is really designed pretty well to get money funded to the people who are capable of doing the research, but it's so hard for them to get it from that point to getting everything approved to the point where they can sit you down and say, I've got this thing, I think it's going to really help you.
Yeah.
And it hurts a little bit as someone who's a big supporter of this research to know how difficult that step is. But it is also encouraging to see that there are places that, you know, are doing these spinal and like these stimulator inserts and things like that.
Oh, yes.
That's absolutely massive. Yes. I mean, where they're actually putting them in humans, that's incredible.
Yes.
That's coming along.
Yes.
So let's take a little bit of a detour more so to, you know, the funding and philanthropy piece, because I know that's, you know, a long time of your history has been really surrounded in that effort. But, you know, in your opinion, why should people think about funding SCI research so specifically versus all these other places that are asking for unsolicited money?
You know, a cure treatment for us would be so huge upon so many things. I mean, I could sit here all night and tell you about all the different facets, but a cure treatment, not even to think what it would do for our general well-being, our psyche, our emotion, the person in the chair. How about the people around them? Mm-hmm. How about the caregivers around them? How about the whole medical system mm-hmm. that is, in my opinion, overwhelmed now? And then you look at the research side of it and the federal government trying to knock down the NIH is funding. That's not helping the situation.
Not in the slightest.
But what, you know, all the benefits. And then let's go back into not spinal cord injury. How about palsy? How about MS, MD? All these other neurological problems.
Mm-hmm.
Neurology has been a battle since the day they opened up a human being to work on them and help them.
And they realized the brain is so unbelievably complex that... I completely agree.
And the brain, they're actually getting some answers down on. It's the spinal cord that's become almost taboo no man's land. And they don't even want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've often said, I swear to God, I'll go over to that university. I'd like to open up that medical book in neurology. And it's going to be full of nothing but empty pages. I'm like, come on, get into this.
Yeah.
Let's get this fixed. And, you know, every step we've made and all of the organizations and all the funding, again, the needle is moving.
Mm-hmm.
And we're proving all of this. This isn't as taboo as it crazy and crazy as it is. This is doable. This is fixable. It just takes the amount of effort. And then, like you said, from bench side to bedside, that transition from the research into the patient.
Yeah.
And that's got to get going. And to me, we've got some things here that I think are right on the cusp.
Yeah.
We ain't going to know till we get it in human, but I've talked to many researchers and doctors, and they're like, this is great, but, and I feel for them. My ideas are not your licenses and your livelihood of going to medical school.
Right.
I didn't attend medical school.
Exactly.
You know, and you don't play with those things lightly, and they got to tiptoe. And I get that, but how long are we going to tiptoe? We got to get this in, because I'll tell you, if this something cracks it's going to crack a lot of doors and make a lot of people happy.
Yeah.
It's taking the heat off the care system alone.
Totally.
Huge.
I think you raise a really good point in the fact that spinal cord research touches so many other fields at the same time.
Yeah.
The neurology, the science of neurology is so complex and intertwined. And I think for the listeners, viewers at home, it's very important to understand how intertwined these things are and how, breakthroughs, while they might be specifically targeting spinal cord injuries, they could have a breakthrough that is going to change the life of somebody who's dealing with a totally different neurological issue.
Yeah.
And so there's value in all sorts of research being pushed forward because it is just going to help progress everything. Yeah. But to your point, kind of towards the end there, you talked about there being research that's really kind of pushing the boundaries. Is there, any specific researchers or things that have happened more recently that you're particularly excited about and kind of gung-ho on pushing the envelope on further?
As crazy as it sounds, 2 weeks, about a month ago, we got some exciting research right out of the University of Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
They developed a 3D printed scaffold.
Mm.
And then as they were getting that approved, of course, technology marches on, right?
Right.
All of a sudden, the main researcher, Dr. Ann Parr, and you've had her as a guest.
Yep.
She's got stem cells along with a mixture of polyputinant cells that they use.
Yeah.
And they're able to 3D print those right into the scaffold of the injury site.
Wow. So they can fill the 3D printer with those cells.
As well as the scaffold. It's a twofold gig.
Incredible.
Yes, I'm very excited. Because that, again, you fill that gap and you get it.
Yeah.
The nerves growing. And again, everybody thought stem cells was going to save the day. I ran across stem cells the first time it hit my desk, 1990.
Yeah.
That's been 30 years.
Yeah.
And we thought we were going to be done by the... By 2000, everything on the planet was going to be cured with stem cells. And again, not to be had. Again, it fools you, but...
Yeah. Well, and it's tricky, right? Like, yes. you might have found a little avenue where it's like, ooh, these are perfect for this use case, but they're just not going to cut it for what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yep.
No, but that's super cool. I had not heard that.
Yes.
So that's very exciting research.
Very exciting. Because it's another piece to the puzzle. We've got the stimulators. We've got the gap filled. We got these cells working for us. We just got to get it into person, see what's going to happen. They did it with the rats, and they seem to have some success. So let's try it in a human.
Right, exactly.
So that's where I think we're at. And what better than the University of Minnesota? They got a great program out there.
It is an incredible program. I think you kind of touched on this already, but that kind of leads me towards this question of, like, what would you tell our listeners about why now is the time to be investing in research? I think one of the things you touched on is this issue with the NIH grants and funding that's going on right now. Politically, not to get too political, like, we don't want to alienate anybody. But at the same time, I think there are other reasons why right now is so important as well. And I wanted to give you a moment to kind of touch on that.
Well, I think an investment in anything that needs doing is a good investment. And if you feel in your heart and your mind that this needs to be done, then you need to do it. But more importantly, I'd really like to see the spinal cord injury community, us in chairs, get out there and do something. I, when I was first injured, thought, what can I do to, this is a bugger. I want out of this so bad.
Yeah.
But what can I do? And I'm like, I'm not physically able to do the science. I can't even go to a laboratory and wash dishes. What can I do? The only thing I could do, I can raise some money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, when I found the place where I wanted to give it, then I got busy with ideas. Bake sales, golf tournaments, appeal letters right on your computer. You just mail them out to your friends and family. They want to help you.
Yeah.
Every year we have members in our organization, our chapter, that come, they mail out their letters once a year, if it's over the holidays or whenever it suits them,
yeah.
Whenever they feel that their family and friends are ready. But call on the people you do business with. Talk to the trash guy. Talk to your accountant. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
I hit everybody that wasn't moving that I did business with and my family did business with, and I was able to collect a lot of money. Friends had fun at the golf tournament. Car washes. Teenagers will put on car washes.
Yeah.
They love doing this sort of thing. And the money all goes in. It's all charity. You're a volunteer. And, again, this is a great time because the only way we're going to make advancements and things are going on. We got rockets that land backwards. Really? We're up on Mars with a rover and we can't get nerves to grow the width of a human hair? Something wrong, David. I don't know. I really don't know.
I that's a great line. We might have to steal that for the, social media or something. But, I think one of the things that interests me is, the way we're talking about this research, it's like how are you able to live a fulfilling life but still have the drive and the kind of the grit and tenacity to be so harsh? I shouldn't say harsh, but like hard-nosed about research and wanting to push the, continuing to push the envelope, but at the same time living a full life. How are you able to balance those two things?
Well, it's almost like, it's almost like this is my destiny. It's almost like having a job. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I guess it's not what I wanted to do. It's not what I planned, but I guess this is where I'm put. And when I go at stuff, and this is just me, I'm a fire, and I will make a presence and be known. And fire's living the rest of the life. Yes, you can do things, and you can do certain things. And yes, I have my fun. I go out with my friends and do all these sorts of things. Are they the things I really want to do? No, probably not. But I'm in this, so you work within the parameters, and you still try to do the best you can.
Yeah, and continue to push the envelope.
Exactly. But if you don't push it, it's going to stay stagnant. And, again, we need investment from everybody. But I can't say it enough. The spinal cord injury community should be leading the charge.
Yeah.
It's there to be led. We're not talking 1960. We're talking 2026 or 2025.
Yeah.
Totally. Let's do something here.
Right.
It's crazy, but it's so small, it gets overlooked. Everything else gets funding. Every cancer and all these other ailments out there, yes, they're important and they'll probably take a lot more people, but this one gets overlooked. It's sad, but it's devastating.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you're here talking to us because hopefully we can help, promote it and continue to try and push
Appreciate
it.
Appreciate that.
One last question for you today, and then I think we're about at time. But okay. If a cure came along, say, in your lifetime, what would be the first thing you'd want to do?
That's interesting. I think what I would love to do is something very simple. I would love to go to the bathroom by myself. That's what I would just every day people take that for granted, and I can't do that. That would be refreshing.
Yeah.
No. Along with tons of other things I could do.
no doubt about it. I would very much miss my time with my phone in the bathroom if I couldn't have it. So I can see how that would be appealing. Well, Jeff, this has been a super eye-opening discussion, at least from my perspective. I hope it was enjoyable for you.
Yes, very much.
Awesome. Well, I do want to take a moment, thank everybody who's watching or listening at home. If you're watching us on YouTube, obviously we'd love it if you hit the thumbs up icon. Give us a subscription. The bell icon lets you know when new episodes drop. Otherwise, if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, a follow is always appreciated. From all of us here at MCPF, Jeff, we really just thank you for all the hard work that you do and the questioning that you do to make sure that people are being held accountable and really pushing for a cure. A treatment, a way that we can actually get real change to people living with paralysis. It's motivating and very exciting. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
All right.